Hey, good morning. I don't hide my M&Ms. My wife eats them before I ever even get to look at one. So, which is all right, I guess. So.
You're in a car somewhere? Tomorrow, are you in a car somewhere because you're on the road, or I guess because I'm not calling you at your usual spot?
Yeah, I'm in Good Earth Village in Spring Valley.
Oh, okay.
So it's a wonderful place. Get over here. Oh, not as often as I'd like, I guess. A few times a year I get over here and really enjoy it. It's a lovely, a lot of walking trails and beautiful nature things. So it's a cool place to be. We all have to be somewhere. And when we're lucky, we get to be somewhere like Good Earth Village.
Hey, I was going to mention, I was talking about your granddaughter, Joey, who is our star basketball player here at Minnesota State, and they have gone on to the next level. I was wondering, are you following her around all these games that they're traveling all over for?
As many as we can. They're headed to the Elite Eight, and Joey she's an incredible basketball player and just a wonderful, wonderful person. But I'm a little prejudiced being her grandpa, but she is just a lovely young lady, and the whole team is made up of outstanding players, every single one of them. And the coaches do a wonderful job, and it's fun watching them because they have fun playing. There's a lot of smiles and giggling and laughing, and they just seem to really enjoy the competition, their opponents, and, of course, their teammates. So it's a joy to see them play. So thanks for asking.
Yeah.
And to the men, I hope they win today as well.
So yes.
There's a lot of great things going on basketball-wise at Minnesota State. Tomorrow, though, is a big day, so get out to that greeting card display in your closest store there, because March 20th is World Sparrow Day.
Oh!
So be sure to thank a sparrow tomorrow when you see one. Just say, thanks for being a sparrow. I really appreciate you, because it'll make you both feel better when you appreciate something. I do want to thank everybody who showed up at the St. Peter Community Center last week. They had, I think, as Gabriella said, a packed house. So it was really nice. So seeing old friends, new friends, classmates, my former pastor, who still hasn't quite recovered from being my pastor for a while. So it was lovely seeing them all. Before I left home, there was the bird feeder was really lively today, and it entertained me. But under the feeder, a chipmunk scampered about. And chipmunks might be the epitome of scamperers. I think squirrels are more into scurrying. Chipmunks, they don't hibernate in the truest sense. They don't put on much fat before taking a long nap. And some people refer to it as a partial hibernation because the body temperature drops and the heart rate slows. But theirs is I would call it a waking sleep. So unlike deep hibernators, they wake occasionally. They usually don't leave their dens. What they do is they relieve themselves, they have a snack, and go back to sleep. Sound familiar? I know a lot of people are saying, yeah, I understand that. However, on mild days, they come out and wander from their underground burrows. But now they're starting to come up and just eat and enjoy a little bit of sun on their fur. I love chipmunks. When my tomatoes ripen, I shake a fist at them because they love tomato juice. And again, when those tomatoes ripen, they chew holes in the bottom and just lick up the juice. And while these chipmunks were dining above ground, a turkey vulture was way above ground, flying overhead in an otherwise empty space. There was so much empty space, it rivaled that we find in a bag of potato chips. I think it's nice, the potato chip manufacturers, when they give us a bag of air, that they throw a few chips in there. But this vulture had migrated to the southern U.S. for the winter. Maybe even farther south, maybe into Mexico or somewhere. But this one was teetering and gliding its way back to Minnesota. vultures migrate during the day, so you will see them during migration. And it's just impossible not to be impressed by birds for me. Kim Williams, who I saw on my way here and there and back again, I saw seven crows, and they were perched on seven fence posts. And I suspect it was a board meeting of some kind, because that's the way they looked. And I hope good things came from it. Kim Williams of Heartland sent me a photo of a meadowlark that she'd seen while traveling through Missouri, or Missouri, depending on which way you travel through there. Diane Dunham, who writes a wonderful garden column for the Mankato Free Press, said, I heard my first red-winged blackbird on March 10th. Spring has sprung on Lake Emily. Tate Putman saw an American pipit at Trooper Slough in Fribourne County and a snow and greater white-fronted goose hybrid on Geneva water treatment plant. And Tate, I live in Fribourne County. I have no idea where Trooper Slough is. I'm going to have to look that up, because I like seeing American pipits, cute little birds. Milt Blumberg saw a pectoral sandpiper on County Road 26 in Ellendale. And Andrew Nyhus saw an American white pelican in Fribourne County and Faribault County. Andrew also saw a broad-winged hawk in Faribault County and an American pipit also in Fribourne County. John Tomford saw a northern saw-whet owl. Oh, that'd be really cool to see in Blue Earth County. Tiny little owls that make a sound like a really small, heavy-duty equipment backing up. Paul Janser saw a western meadowlark in Faribault County. Chad Hines, an eastern meadowlark in Blue Earth County. Brian Smith also had an eastern meadowlark in Faribault County. Brian Smith saw a Ross's goose at the Sleepy Eye water treatment plant and a sandhill crane in Le Sueur County. John Tomford saw a sandhill crane in Waseca County. Brian Smith had an American white pelican in Le Sueur County. And Brian also saw an American pipit in Brown County. So I guess, you know, look up and look around to see meadowlarks now, American pipit, and white American white pelicans, I guess those, and sandhill cranes. So those would probably be the ones to keep your peepers wide open today to see. Roger Davidson sent me a thing from the Washington Post, an article, that would be the thing. I said 7 months after Florida's corals faced what scientists called their worst bleaching event ever, a similar emergency grips the Great Barrier Reef. Its famed corals are under unprecedented, in some spots, fatal stress as a relentless summer heat in Australia stretches into early fall. When I was a kid, it was hard for me to get my head wrapped around how Australia can have winter when we're having summer, and now they're having fall when we're going into spring. It just didn't seem right to me. Of course, I didn't know anybody from Australia. I suppose I could have called there, but I'd still be an indentured servant to my father had I made that call. But it's just amazing what's going on with the Great Barrier Reef down there. I've got a list of things from them. Hormel Nature Center, they have a lot of free family programs, and on these are all a little ways away. June 13th, they have one at 10 and 1, and it's How to Know a Whale, and Felicia Cooper makes puppet shows for children through the Bell Museum, and she'll use found objects and simple machines and hand-cut shadow puppets to share her joy with the audience. On July 11th, there'll be Animals Among Us. So humans aren't the only things that live in cities, so they will be discussing what the other ones that might be living there right beside us, unbeknownst to us. On July 18th, the International Owl Center show, they will you get to meet a live great horned owl. Do not shake hands with this owl. That's all I'm saying, but it's fun to see them. You will see pumacorns, which are those feathered ear tufts that have nothing to do with an ear, but they're called pumacorns. And on August 1st, the Reptile and Amphibian Discovery Zoo. It's the Rad Zoo, so you get to meet some awesome reptiles, and you learn about turtles, lizards, snakes, and a small alligator. And there'll be an opportunity to touch a reptile at the end of presentation. And I know a lot of you are saying, boy, I'm having a pretty good day. But, man, I would just love to touch a reptile today before it gets dark. So that's on August 1st. These are all a ways away. This is at the J.C. Hormel Nature Center in Austin, another place like Good Earth Village here. Just stop there and go for a walk. They have all kinds of walk. You'll be walking prairie, walking over the streams and rivers there, and it's a great place to visit. I can't recommend either of these places highly enough. A listener said, why do raccoons have black around their eyes? They do have black around their eyes. Why would you want black around your eyes? Well, they probably can't afford sunglasses. It's an occupational hazard when you think about it. It comes from working nights. Raccoons work nights, and you all know if we work too much, what do we get? We get those kind of bags or black under our eyes, and everybody says, well, when's the last time you slept? Well, these black rings help reduce glare from lights, so it makes it easier for the little bandits to see during their nighttime escapades. And I know a lot of you are thinking, well, the glare from headlights doesn't seem to bother them much because they're laying on roads everywhere. It's much like, if you think of those black around their eyes, it's much like the black stripes that athletes, I see it, baseball and
football
primarily, yeah, they put under their eyes during the sporting events, and they absorb light and reduce glare. When I played, we had to smear this black gunk on there. Now I think they have some kind of tape-like stuff that makes them look a lot cooler, because ours would kind of run with sweat, and you ended up with, you didn't look like it was, it wasn't just around your eyes, it'd be around your mouth and on your chin and everywhere else.
It's like mascara. Cool. It's like mascara when it runs.
Was.
Girls know that very well.
Yes, they do. So that's, the raccoon gets its English name from, I think it's a Powhatan tribe, and it means one that scratches with its hands. So they scratch themselves like every man I've ever encountered. It gets its name Trash Panda from people who deal with them. So another thing, a couple years ago, I'm outside doing something with the bird feeders at night. I think I'm taking them in so the raccoons don't get at them. And I heard some noise up in the tree. So I had a little one of these little mini flashlights. I flashed it up there, and it was a young raccoon. And he immediately covered his eyes. I could see him. He's playing his my thumb. I'm looking right at him, but he covers his eyes. And raccoons do cover their eyes when they're scared or trying to hide. Who else does that? All of us when we were small children, when we were trying to hide from somebody, we covered our eyes. We exhibited the same behavior. So scientists have studied this tendency in humans, and they discovered something I think is so interesting, that young children with their eyes covered, they acknowledge that their bodies, arms, hair, feet, and legs, those could all be seen, but they will insist that they couldn't be seen. So they cover their eyes, you say, you can't see me, no matter if you can see most of me. So raccoons must have this concept, I don't know what we call it, selfhood or theory of mind, whatever name you want to get to it, but they must have that same concept that we did when we were kids. So I left this little raccoon. I took the feeders away so he couldn't destroy them, because they like to pull them down and drag them off. And last year. I seem to lose one feeder a year to raccoons. Last year, it was a small suet feeder, and it disappeared, and I have never seen it or found it. So they carried it off somewhere and put it out in the woods. Who knows what they've done with it? They're using it as a trophy somewhere in their den. I don't know. I keep figuring one day I'll be staggering around out there and stumble over it and say, hey. And so I had to go get another little suet feeder. So, of course, now the raccoons owe me. I don't know who to bill, but I'm going to bill somebody. And somebody said, or asked, they said things too, but then they asked, and this is somebody from South Dakota, and they said, thanks for KMSU. I listen online. How did the gyr falcon get its name? And gyr falcon is spelled G-Y-R falcon. And the name, I believe it derives from an old Norse word for spear. And it a gyr falcon was a medieval falconer's dream because it was mainly reserved for royalty. So if a falconer had a gyr falcon, he was either royalty or probably working for the royalty. So my people, we were out there just looking at it and said, boy, someday I'm going to win the lottery, and then I'm going to have a gyr falcon. That's what's going to happen in our lives, and we won't be serfs anymore. So that's something to look for. And then the problem was is we had to wait how many generations for a true lottery, the big times. I'm sure they had lotteries back then, but they probably weren't always good things, the lotteries that they had. Listener says, how many babies does a possum have? Possums in Minnesota, they mate, they're mating now January and May, probably between January and May. She will often bear two litters, and listen to this, she will have 6 to 20 babies a year.
That's too many.
Yeah, the poor little possum, no wonder they get run over on the road.
Yeah, how many actually survive? You know, is there?
You know, I bet it's not very high. And a newborn possum is called the same thing as my granddaughter, a Joey.
Oh.
We don't usually call her a Joey; we just say Joey. But they are called Joeys, just like baby kangaroos. They are a half an inch long, and they weigh way less than a penny. I love putting weigh and weigh together in a sentence. They weigh way less than a penny. The possum, if you look in, everybody's probably got a greeting card or something, seen photos or some kind of gag thing with a possum hanging by his tail. The possum rarely hangs by its tail, and it uses its long prehensile tail for balance, to grip as it climbs trees. And I've watched them in my yard. They use it to gather bedding. It's like they're gathering up shocks of corn or hay and just roll their tail around it, and away they go with this, I don't know, a weedy rear end look. I don't know, I guess that's cool in the possum world. But they do use their tail for interesting things, but not so much hanging from a tree. And part of the problem is when they're a little baby or young possum, they can do that because they don't have much weight. But after a while, possums gain some size, get like a pretty good size house cat. So then when they're hanging by their tail, there's a pretty good chance they're just going to fall on their face because they're not going to be able to, that tail isn't going to be able to support the weight. So they are neat things to see, and I tell everybody that I like possums. I know, a friend used to call them grinners, which
grinners.
When I was growing up, a grinner was a northern shoveler duck, which was also called a smiling mallard or a Hollywood mallard. And why a Hollywood mallard? I think it's because, all the people in Hollywood, all the actors, they bring the cameras out and then they got to get the big smile on there. And then it turns into a grump very often right afterwards, but they got that smile. So these were like mallards that were in Hollywood, and they were smiling. And that's my theory, and I'm going to stick with it. But they are beautiful. But she called the grinners were possums to her, and I can see why, because when they play possum, they just open this mouth filled with, 50 teeth in there. They have a lot of teeth. And it looks like they're smiling when they're playing dead, except for the tongue flopping out. That's kind of takes the smiling part away. But how much help is it to feed birds in the winter? Somebody called doctor, and they forgot to put anything else on the end of it, or maybe doctor's a nickname. I'm not sure. There was a study published in, Journal of Animal Ecology, I believe it was, not too long ago, and it found that birds with access to feeders during the winter were able to maintain a slightly higher body temperature at night compared to those who didn't have access. And that just makes sense. We all need fuel. Fuel, we convert it into energy. If we don't have fuel, we run out of energy. Birds need to maintain a certain body temperature at all times, but at night in Minnesota, you need your body temperature to stay up there. Otherwise, you're not going to make it through the night. So this study indicates that feeder birds gathered enough energy to survive a winter night without needing to lower their body temperature as much. And I have preached forever. I said, birds do all right without us because they've been doing it for eons. But it helps. It helps to feed them. It probably is less stress in their life. It just makes easier for them to find food. So it's nice to have a study that says, what all of you thought all these years that you're helping birds by feeding them. You know what? You're right, believe it or not. So pat yourself on the back, they would be telling us if they were talking to us. But it's nice to hear that because I love feeding birds. And again, I tell everybody we feed birds. Why? Because we like watching them. And that's probably still the main reason. But we're doing a good thing too. So
that we have a couple of texts. So before we get done. So hello,
ma'am. Let's have Adam.
All right. Hello, ma'am. Please ask the bird guy about owl bedtimes. We heard an owl hooty hoot hooting around 8 a.m. this morning. Lily shouted out that he should be in bed. She would like to know what time owls go to bed in the morning. Thanks, Jennifer and Lily.
Yeah, well, Jennifer, thanks, Lily. That's a great question. And you're right, probably. They can be, they're nocturnal for the most part. But they can be crepuscular, which means they're active at dawn and dusk. And I think sometimes they see that more often in younger owls, that they're out at that time because they're still kind of just trying to learn about everything. But typically when it starts getting pretty light, they find a place where they can go, and they like to find a place. Of course, now the great horned owls are nesting. But otherwise, they like to find a place where they can kind of camouflage so they won't be hectored by birds, other birds, primarily crows, who just do not like owls at all. You can ask any crow, they'll have nothing good to say about an owl. And so it's around this time of day, because if they're out there flying around much at 8 in the morning, that's what they're going to find is crows. And crows are going to find where they go, and then they're going to just pester them probably all day. And so you want to get to bed early. That's a lesson for all of us out there, I think. Get to bed early before the crows get us.
All right. There's a P.S. to this, Al. P.S.
Oh, okay.
We heard Al talking about birds going after his tomatoes. Word on the street is that if you paint rocks to look like strawberries and put them on the ground around your plants before they produce fruit, the birds will leave the yummy stuff alone because they'll think the berries are rocks. Perhaps this would work with tomatoes as well. I never heard that.
Well, I've not heard that either, but if I don't try it, I hope somebody does.
Yeah.
So they can report back and say, boy, that really worked. I can picture putting one out there and a little chipmunk chipping a tooth on it or something, and maybe that would put him off tomatoes. Because, you know, it makes sense in a way. So maybe I'll try that. Maybe my wife will paint some strawberry rocks for me.
All right,
she has all the M&Ms.
Yes, I got a text from Matt from Mankato. He said, twice I've opened a hood to a car and found an opossum. And he actually shows a picture on the text here of an opossum on his under his car hood. So is it like cats that they go under there to get the warmth? Because I know cats used to do that on the farm.
Yeah, I would guess. And then there's also sometimes, a little, I don't know, foods of some kind that they might lick up, you know, things like antifreeze. It's not good for them, but maybe if it's diluted enough, they can lick it up. But yeah, that's cool, man. I've not heard that. You know, mice are terrible getting in there. I tell an incredibly long story about losing my mother's cat, driving it from Heartland to Albert Lea, Minnesota, to drop something off at the lawyer's. I parked the car, and all of a sudden I heard, and I thought, is my car overheating? So I opened the hood, out jumped my mother's cat and ran down the road, and I wasn't able to catch it, so I had to go home and tell my mother I got bad news. She said, you didn't drop that off at the lawyer's? They needed it today. And I said, no, I lost your cat in Albert Lea. So we went back down there, and my mom called for it, and it never did show up. So we hoped it found a happy home. But, yeah, things like getting under the hood of our cars, and it's a pretty safe place if we're not driving.
Well, if they don't get caught in the fan, that's the hard part. We've had some that, you know, are the belts or something. And I remember going from the farm to church one morning back in Wisconsin, and we stopped the car to go off to Sunday school, and all of a sudden we heard a mew mew, and there was a kitten. So we had the kitten. Mom says, you can't take that into church. So we had to leave her in the car till we got back out.
Everyone is welcome there, Karen.
Taken
the cat.
Are right. So, hey, I've got another text here for you. I've got just a bunch here. This is from our friend John in New Ulm. Almost comedy. My sore knee and sore shoulder don't live too far apart from each other, so I introduce them to each other. They're more happy and less lonely now. It's true misery loves company. I don't think I'll tell them when I have a headache. Two's company and three's a crowd. Have a good day and a better tomorrow. John.
Thanks, John. Yeah. I guess I've always heard that misery loves company, but it depends on which end of the thing you are there, the spectrum of misery, I guess. So some of us just like to crawl off and be by ourselves when we're miserable for a while. So.
All right. That's all I got the letters from folks today. So thank you, folks, for sending in your notes. And we always like to share them with Al. So if you send any during the week, we'll make sure Al gets them as well.
And I want to thank Matt Hayes, who sent me a lovely card featuring a barred owl on the cover. So thanks, everybody, for sitting on the front porch with us. It's really neat being in your company. I saved some daylight thanks to daylight saving time, and I used it to check on the Groundhog Day predictions as of St. Patrick's Day. I remembered the good years, the years we had tire swings, back when people considered cigarettes to be a vegetable. There weren't many indoor cats or indoor kids. When I was a kid, I wanted to be an entomologist, but was told to buzz off because I was too young. My school had a lovely blackboard. It was remarkable. It was back when you knew what you were going to get from a box of chocolates because the label on the box clearly showed it. We said things like, can February, March? No, but April, May, while playing dice games because I was a Yahtzee sympathizer. I'd read War and Peace in just 3 weeks when I was in grade school, and that was no big deal. It was only three words. I fell in love with libraries there, and there was a day a few years ago when my cousin Shirley had lost her job at the satellite radio company. Her boss said, Shirley, you can't be serious. I was at a library book sale searching for a gift to cheer Shirley up. They had some things other than books for sale. One of them was a transistor radio with a 50-cent price tag and the volume stuck on high. I couldn't turn that down. Remember, folks, thanks for listening. Heartless Walworth driving past. Do something wild today. Get out and look at a bird. thank you so very much, Karen, for your good company, and go Mavs, horns up.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Steve just sent a note I want to share with you before you go, because we usually get some by the end of the show, regarding possums. Some 45 years ago, living near Winona in the bluffs on the Mississippi River, we saw a possum family hanging from a limb. An older fellow living nearby told us possums were never there in all his years until around that time, and I figured they were migrating up the river as the weather got warmer. From Steve. So, there we go.
Thanks, Steve. A perfect storm of possums.
Yes. Al, we wish Joey good luck on the basketball court, and we'll be watching to see how they do.
Thank you very much. That means a lot.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.